Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Murder in the Morning with Tony Bruschi and Stacey Cole.
A federal court has now heard arguments from Karen Reed's defense team in a critical hearing on Wednesday as they pushed to dismiss two of the charges against her, citing double jeopardy. This was one of two hearings scheduled that day, and it could determine whether Reed faces another trial for the 2022 death of her boyfriend, Boston police officer John O'Keefe. Reed, who's 44, of Mansfield, is accused of striking O'Keefe with her SUV outside a home in Canton on January 29th, 22, then allegedly leaving him in a snowstorm after a night of drinking. The defense, however, has long maintained that she is a victim of a cover-up, that O'Keefe's death was caused by others, blah, 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 blah. Potentially even law officers. Yeah. For over 90 minutes, Chief Judge Dennis Saylor listened to arguments dissecting whether Judge Beverly Cannone properly declared a mistrial and whether she should have polled the jury before doing so. Reed's attorneys claimed that they spoke to jurors after the trial, and those jurors confirmed that they had reached a unanimous verdict, not guilty of second-degree murder, not guilty of leaving the scene of an accident resulting in death. And if that's the case, the defense argues, retrying Reed would be a blatant violation of her constitutional protection against double jeopardy. I don't understand how that really would be, because they didn't say that. They didn't come out in court and say that. And just going and polling people after the fact, that's not official.
No.
It's just, no. If we did that for every trial, yeah. That's why it's so, so important that there's arguments made of what gets into the trial and what doesn't get into the trial, because they're exposed to everything afterwards. And they may find information that they go, this probably should have been in there, and they may change their opinion. Just saying.
It's a stretch.
It is. But they're going to try anything they can. Defense attorney Martin Weinberg made the case clear. We had a lengthy argument in front of the chief judge of the United States District Court on issues of profound constitutional significance. The question is whether or not the Norfolk District Attorney can re-prosecute Ms. Reed when there's such a strong and compelling evidence that the prior jury acquitted her. That's his statement. Strong, compelling evidence. Jurors saying something different after the fact. But the prosecution wasn't having it. Caleb Schlinger, representing the DA's office, countered that the jury never filed or filled out verdict slips or sent any notes to Cannone indicating that they had reached a partial verdict. His argument was simple. There was no acquittals. He pointed out that if the roles were reversed and the prosecution tried to argue the jury had found her guilty, Reed's team would have objected just as strongly. Here's a little look at some of the arguments that were made in court about just this. Let's take a look.
As the court's aware, there are certain materials throughout the duration of this case that have been disclosed to the defense pursuant to protective orders. Protective orders are sacred. If there was no need for protective order, there wouldn't be a need for court intervention to protect the material. When an attorney violates Mass Rule of Criminal Procedure 48, the court can impose sanctions. In this instance, that was the genesis for this motion, there was recently provided materials that the court ordered the defense not to disclose to the public. those materials, which is some of very important materials. In the reciprocal discovery motion, the defense put the materials into the public domain despite the court's protective order. Now, it's important for the court to determine the nature of that violation because the ability of the court to sanction is broad and wide. There have been other violations, but at this point, a month before trial, given the history of this case, it is important to make sure that these type of violations don't happen again. What stands out to me in the reciprocal discovery motion that the defense used as a vehicle to disseminate this information to the public is that they create an argument suggesting why it is important to include this information. In the memorandum, page 9, what they suggest to the court is because the trooper did not want to watch the closing, it implied that he had been following the entire trial. There's absolutely no reasonable interpretation whatsoever that because a witness, like any other witness, who was not bound by a sequestration order at the time of closing, didn't want to watch a closing, there is no good faith basis whatsoever that that witness watched other parts of trial. It is an empty shell to make that suggestion, which then gives them the tunnel to put this information into the public. And when you look at the nature of the information, it's obvious why the defense wants this information of the public. It's part of the consistent public relations campaign they have sought. It is a month before a trial, and rather than discuss the facts and litigate the facts in front of the jury, it is a deliberate, ongoing, strategic investment to reach the potential jury pool.
He's not likable.
Tony, talk about being blunt.
He's not. He's not likable. And it's not to say that his arguments are wrong or bad. He's just not likable. And a lot of this case is a PR campaign of motivating people one way or another. And I'll say Karen Reed's attorneys are a hell of a lot more likable than him, even if he comes with more, you know, facts based on fact. That's a big thing in this.
I feel like attorneys need to have, and we see this on TV with, what's the one that had William Shatner?
Star Trek?
Ally McBeal.
Okay.
And there's another one that William Shatner is in. Every attorney that you see get up in court on TV is charismatic, is like they're in an acting class and they're trying to impress the audience. You know, they're putting on a show. It's not just, hey, I know law and I understand how things work. It's watch me, you know, illustrate why my client is either, you know, guilty or not guilty. They're putting on a show. It's a theater performance. And you can tell the ones who
are good at
just don't have that. They're book smart. They understand the law inside and out. And if you want to consult them in their office, you're going to get some really good information. But if you want them in a court of law in front of a jury, you might not get the best show.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be decided that way, but it's how people react. I mean, this guy reminds me of the kid in sixth grade who had the knee socks with the stripes on and the giant glasses that look like Coke bottle bottoms and, you know, would just argue like, you know, dorky things or things that were very factual, but it didn't resonate with anyone.
Well, and here's the interesting part. When you become an adult, you learn that those were the really smart people you should have paid attention to and had in your circle.
To a certain extent,
people work.
But at the same point, when you become an adult, you also realize charisma is more than is very, very important. Even especially in cases like this, because if you have the wrong defense attorney, if they're presenting the case in a very accurate way, if they're not likable, the jury kind of feels like, yeah, you know, not going to help you. Judge Saylor acknowledged the weight of the issue and promised to issue his opinion quickly, knowing that whoever loses will appeal. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking. The retrial is scheduled to begin on April 1st. The federal hearing came hot on the heels of another major development. Just the day before, during a hearing in state court, Special Prosecutor Hake Brennan made a statement that raised eyebrows. The federal investigation into O'Keefe's death was officially closed. But outside the courtroom, Karen Reed wasn't so sure. Speaking to reporters, she questioned whether the probe was actually over, referencing a letter from the U.S. Attorney's Office she received just a month earlier. "If I take him at his word, that would be a very dangerous endeavor of mine," she said. "But I've seen a letter from the U.S. Attorney's Office from 1 month ago, and it said it was ongoing." It was a four-page, single-spaced letter. The conflicting statements only add to the controversy surrounding the case, fueling speculation about the integrity of the investigation itself. If the probe was still active just weeks ago, what changed? And why the sudden declaration that it's over? Is this an overstep? And did he overstate that in court? Did he just assume it's over and he's just saying it out loud? I mean, is there anything backing up that statement? And how would
big
he
deal.
Know? Well, and
it's
how would
very,
he know?
Very big thing to proclaim.
Well,
and they don't just go out there and say things just for the fun of it.
No.
It has to be absolutely researched before it comes out of their mouth.
Well, and usually they're the ones that are going to make the claim that it's over, the actual federal investigators, not an attorney or a DA or something. Reed's legal team isn't slowing down. They were right back in the Norfolk Superior Court later the same day, continuing to fight through pretrial motions, which we'll have the audio for you if you want to listen to all of that here on the podcast channel. Whether or not she faces trial again, one thing is certain. This case is, it keeps going. It's not going to end anytime soon.
I don't think they're going to go to court April 1st.
No, I don't either.
No. Too much is up in the air right now. There's no way that they can come back to court and do a thorough trial. They just can't.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
if you've been sitting with bated breath for April 1st for this trial, you're going to be sadly disappointed.
As of this recording, we still don't know what Cannone's going to do on Alan Jackson or any of it. We just don't know yet. That could happen at any time. She could make her ruling, but she's still kind of thinking on it. And there's a lot of motions being argued in the meantime because they kind of got to get that done if they're going to hit that that deadline for the trial. I just think
we're going to see.
There's more theatrics coming. There's more stuff. Just more fluff, more things that are going to be. I don't know. I think Karen Reed is trying to play. Let's keep this drawn out for as long as we possibly can till a judge eventually just says, screw it. That may just happen. I think they should. I think that's where it really should go. Not because I don't think she hit him accidentally. I think she probably did. But okay, I don't think she tried to. Everyone's gone through hell on this. What are we getting at the end of the day? Again, you're John O'Keefe. You're looking down on this if that's what he's doing. You think he's happy with like, how his community's been ripped apart and how his friends have been ostracized and then watching just the vileness that some of these Karen Reed supporters have for other human beings in their own community over Karen Reed, something that they're not even like remotely connected to or involved in, but they're going to treat other people in horrible ways because of their assumptions. It's messed up.
It is messed up. It's there right now. I'm not sure justice can really be served at this point. It was an unfortunate accident. It doesn't feel like she killed him intentionally. She may have killed him, but I think it was an accident. I think we're getting closer to that. You know, we're not on the jury. It's real easy to sit here and say that, but my gut says that. It was an unfortunate, stupid accident by a bunch of drunk people.
Yeah. And I don't even know if she hit him or if she just, you know, dropped him off, maybe nudged him a little bit. I think he got up and moved around. I think he could have just easily slipped on his own. He's out there. It's icy. Storm is coming in. You're drunk as hell. People
Things
fall.
Could happen.
You can die by falling. I mean, and it's especially on ice. If he goes back, hits his head, gets back up for a second. It doesn't mean he's dead instantly. Usually you do kind of get up and move around a little bit. And then he sits down to try and gather himself or falls over again and then is in the snowbank and then nature takes over. Probably what happened.
Very possible. Yeah. But that's instead, you know, it's, you know, we're not going to know the truth. That's the problem. We are not going to know the truth.
That's why AI needs to start being able to determine what pets are saying. And then we can start having animals testify in court. Like Chloe says, this is what happened, you know, or, you know, the neighborhood, you know, the Dotson down the road says he went over and he had a little munch on John's arm, but that's all it was. Can you imagine if pets could testify in court?
I'm not sure I want to know what they have to say.
Can you imagine if pets could just, if AI finds a way of deciphering their language, and especially cats, and is able to translate it.
Yeah,
they're gonna say a lot of shit.
Being a cat guardian myself for probably 20 some years, I think a lot of cats would turn in their owners.
Oh, without a doubt.
I think, yeah, I don't want that day to come. I want to know what's going on with my cats, and I do my best through animal behavior things that I've studied and whatnot, but I don't want to hear from them. I don't want to get an email in my Gmail saying, you know, Chester just emailed us and said that he's very concerned about this, this, and this. I don't know. They're vindictive sometimes.
Well, that's what I'm wondering too. Like, would the cats be honest, or would they be the manipulative, narcissistic little assholes that they are? And I have two cats, so. Like cats are like, I'm not saying I think they're fun animals.
I spent most of my veterinary career focusing on cats. So,
but would they do that? Would they be like, they'll say whatever they need to, like,
yeah, they would be like a 3-year-old or let's say a 4 or 5-year-old child just blurting out the truth when you're like, no, I told you not to say that to grandma.
and here's the deal. You know, we say this facetiously. I don't think that it's an impossibility that this isn't going to be a thing. It may sound crazy. I mean, I thought 2 years ago, the fact that I can have basically a massive story written for me in about 2 minutes that goes into detail that would take me 2 weeks to do.
Research.
Can be there. I mean, that's insane that we can generate the videos that we do, the images that we do, what AI can analyze. I don't think it's a far stretch for AI to analyze speech pattern in certain animals that do seem to have a language like cats to see what the hell they're saying. I don't think it's that far off.
And what would be interesting is I would think it would need to analyze the things that we look for in veterinary medicine are signs. Like, what are their whiskers doing? What are their ears doing? Wow. How about their eye position? Their muzzle? What is their nose doing? What's their tail doing? What's their body posture? Things like that. So it would need to analyze those kinds of things. But if we could actually get in and figure out what their brain is processing and how it's processing these things, it would be very telling. It would change medicine forever. If we could just get any insight into what they're thinking and what they have to say. So it wouldn't, you know, it'd be great for crime.
Yeah.
But my goodness, it would be a game changer if we could ever do that.
I don't know. I wonder if anybody's looking in. I know there's research on that. I know there's like apps out there that claim that it can kind of tell the tone of the cat's meow and kind of give you an idea of what it's saying. I've even tried those and I don't find them to be.
They're really far off. Yeah. But some of the researchers that a couple years back, I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to have some classes in animal welfare and behavior. And they are working on things of this nature. Mainly from a medical standpoint, they want to know what's going on with animals. There's wonderful videos out there of dogs and cats being able to use those speech buttons where they can go up to the buttons and ask for things. If you go research the ones on cats, the cats are getting a little bit more advanced. Like they will start asking for treats, very specific treats. They'll start asking for other kinds of things that I just don't know that it's coincidence. I really think they are putting thought together. I think it's happening.
I've seen some of those, and it's usually like, I want treats, asshole.
And that's the thing.
It will go to like the other button that swears at the person.
And we don't know that they understand that the word asshole means asshole, but they've learned that that pattern gets them food. So we need to decipher, are they really calling you an asshole, or do they just realize that that pattern, when they do that, they get a treat? So it's pretty advanced, but I hope there is a point in our future where we can learn what they're thinking, because could you bring a golden retriever up to the stand in a trial and say, what did you see on the night that your owner was murdered? That would be really interesting. You know, we can do that with Alexa. Can we do that with our dog? Maybe.
I don't know. I'll say this, though. They are calling you asshole.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. He was charming, handsome, a devoted husband, a doting father. When his wife died tragically in a freak accident, everyone pitied him. He played the role so well, grieving widower, devastated, single dad, just trying to put the pieces back together. But the thing about perfect men, they're usually hiding something. And this one was hiding everything. The affair, the insurance policy, the other wife in another state who had no idea she was married to a walking crime scene. If she had only subscribed to True Crime Today, Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, she could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, she could have seen through the lies. She could have gotten out while she still had the chance. Instead, she's just another case we'll be covering next week. Don't be her. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.